It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Sorry about that. I was about an hour. Oh, dear God, is it going to be one of those nights? I was about a minute late getting things started this evening. It's been a jungle of a day, let's put it that way. Thank you very kindly, Brother Deacon Asa. Loud and clear on both streams. Standing on the bow of the USS Trumptanic, headed towards that iceberg at flank speed. All passengers and crew disembark starboard side. To the right, baby. To the right. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It is Titanic Tuesday on the horn. And yes, we have a great deal of... a great number of examples of Titanic intellect coming from the White Wing, which we can take note of this evening. If you'd like, I'm happy to announce that Sparky is back from PG&E's latest power outage and has made it to the chat room. And if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that takes place in the 3 hours in which this program is live every Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific, well, by Jove, just go to headon.live and click on chat room, pick out a screen name and a password if you don't already have one. And you'll be immediately greeted by early arrivers Jimmy and Squeaky, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third-stage guild navigator, has folded space, even in the midst of the crisis in California, to become Man Cave. He will be capably assisted by his sidekick, pinch-hit midweek utility chat room moderator and all-around great guy, Steve, from Georgia Stan. Like I said, we've got a lot of stuff to get into, but every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude. And so thanks go out today and yesterday to Rusty and to Joseph, who re-upped his subscription. Thank you very kindly. Joseph, don't be surprised if, like, at the end of February, your 29th of the month subscription doesn't get completely screwed up because calendars. Oh, why can't we just use the Mayan calendar that was ever so much more accurate than this European one? Yeah, well, no sense in asking why. But thanks. To Joseph and to Rusty, thank you very, very kindly for joining in and being partial sponsors of the program this evening and tomorrow and the evening after that. Continue more than a week of fundraising free radio. Thanks to the Horn Family Community Congregation, which makes this broadcast possible. Thank you very much indeed. I think an update is in order. Part of the reason that it's been a jungle of a day is that Agnes and I have been up and running since about 6 o'clock this morning, So that's 12 hours ago. And we've, Ferg, I'm happy to announce our son, Ferg, is out of jail. It took a hell of a lot of effort on a number of people's parts, Agnes's, mine, lawyers, a modicum of cooperation from the prosecutor's office, and some cooperation from a magistrate. But he's out. That does not mean the problems are ended. That means he's out, which alleviates one of the problems. I don't want to, without permission, I don't want to go into too much detail. But suffice to say, he spent 28 long days in a facility with 600 of Southern West Virginia's worst examples of members of the human race. Now, Berg was being held pretrial on bond, had not been convicted of anything, and was simply shuffled in with people who had been convicted, people who were charged not with misdemeanors but with felonies. As the story song that gets played next month about this time every year, it goes, you know, mother stabbers and father rapers. It was in just the limited amount of information he has provided a horrifying experience. Again, no, I'm not going to go into any brutal details. But that part of it is hopefully past. The other parts of it that remain to be brutally complicated, well, they remain. So, as I speak to you now, from the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion, I do so from an empty house, because Agnes and Ferg aren't here. Just me. Me, the cats, and the dog. That's going to be that way for a while. Because until there is some sort of resolution, because of the nature of the charges against him, he can't have contact with me, either direct or indirect, nor I him. So he and his mother are in a motel across the river while I am here. And it's going to be like that for the foreseeable future. It is not easy. It is frustrating. But we are at least beginning to take the desperately needed steps that he needed. I'm being a bit redundant with my words this evening, I apologize. But we're beginning to take the steps that he desperately needed to take in order to begin what I hope, there's that dangerous word, will be a beginning of healing. And again, hope. So, he will have an intake at the mental health center. We tried today, and but they said come back tomorrow, so that he will do. We will be back in court a week from today, so I will ask your kind indulgence if it turns out that I'm not here a week from today. And all we can do is go from one day to the next. We're going to work on maintaining his sobriety. and getting him, hopefully, that word, properly diagnosed. You know, we had a long conversation about hope and the value of hope and the problems of hope. But I'm not going to say prayerfully, or that we're going to trust in any invisible sky spook, some great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky. All we can do is try to do the work that is necessary. So I don't even, and to be quite candid, I don't even know what Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday this week are going to bring. Everything in our lives is in a state of chaos and flux. But after exactly 4 weeks, 4 weeks that for him were apparently 4 weeks in hell, he is out. And I think that is for the best. Jim asking, do they not have pretrial intervention for first-time offenders? That is certainly not something that has been mentioned to us. We're trying to just get through this hellish process. And look, I'm not making a big deal out of this, but hell, I've got a law school education and this thing's flummoxed me. I can only imagine how tortuous it must be for people who find themselves wrapped up in this misery and negotiating it with no idea whatsoever how brutal it can be. So that's just about as much of an update as I can give, and I cannot thank members of the community enough who reached out to make it possible for us to do the things necessary to get him on the road to recovery. Steve from Georgia Stan says, don't worry about us, don't worry about it. Take care of Ferg, my man. Well, thank you, Steve. That's what we hope to do. That word. That is what we plan to do. That's a little bit better, isn't it? So that's just a little bit of an update to get things going. I don't know when life will return to whatever it is that constitutes normal. For a long time now, thanks to the wisdom of our dear departed friend, Peter Godbold, I have known that normal is nothing more than a setting on a dryer. Because, at best, normal is a benchmark to be noted if observed, but not necessarily a standard to which one aspires. There are mathematical norms, scientific norms, physics norms. There's norm from Cheers. But in the dynamic of human lives, norms seem to be as rare as hen's teeth. So this, even with him out, this is a process that is going to be months, if not a year or more, in completion. And the road that he goes down is one of a lifetime. But ask anybody in the places where they have those meetings, and they will tell you that if you take that long view, you're screwed. That's my understanding. And that the only way you get there is one day at a time. And by working for those for whom it works, by working the steps. So I just, you guys have been an intimate part of this ongoing process, and I wanted to let you know that there had been something take place that partakes of progress. And on the positive side of things, I will tell you that I have never seen a human being happier to see his mama than the young man that I saw earlier today, this morning. And I don't ever want to see my son wearing that hateful inmate orange again so long as I live. I have learned to despise that color. Sorry for the delay there. One of the things I am doing is trying to catch up with a little bit of dinner before the program. And that was the last slurp of bean soup. I used the ham hocks, the Benton's Country ham hocks. And we soaked some Mayakoba's beans and cooked them in the crock pot, and they have just now gotten right, and it was the very thing to energize the evening and go forward with the program. So, that's pretty much everything. Let us check in on that iceberg. Atne ute arfe away. Off the starboard bow. Not necessarily true, Steve. Steve from Georgistan in the chat room saying, bean soup will make you fart. Not if you do it. Not if you soak them right. Not if you soak them right. The trick is to soak them. And, you know, beans are a nitrogen-gathering process. That's why they do what they do. That's why they're beans, the magical fruit. You soak them right, they will release that nitrogen and will be much less gaseous, shall they? Much less windy. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you kindly. Subject line, how it works. Take it a day at a time, an hour at a time, a minute at a time, a second at a time, if you need. Huge hugs from Ralphs. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you so very much. Where to begin this? Oh, by the way, it is National Cat Day. I had no idea until I looked in on social media earlier today. You couldn't tell it from the dirty looks that I got from Mushu and Nyx, because they've been here at the mansion by themselves all day. But I did my best. I made sure that their litter box was clear and that there was plenty of dry cat food and a big bowl of water. So that's how we marked National Cat Day here. That's yummy. That's yummy. Thank you. Thank you very kindly, Monique. Hearts and prayers, love and prayers to you and family. And by the way, some toasted mozzarella, parmesan on thick toast for dipping in those beans, or throw in some white rice on them. Oh, yeah. That, love me some beans and rice. I do. Hey, unpaid product placement, by the way. Speaking of things to throw in a bowl of beans. I ran across these at Kroger's. And I've always been a fan of oyster crackers. I love them. Just little tiny, you know. And they're not all crumbly like the, you know, big old saltines. I don't know who makes these. Moonlight Mixes. Uh-oh, Little Rock, Arkansas. Moonlight Mixes, LLC of Little Rock, Arkansas, produces these things called, hear those? Wicked Minis. And they are seasoned oyster crackers. As best as I can tell, at least what I've got in my local Kroger's. They come in garlic parmesan, garden dill, and red hot chili pepper. I've tasted all three. They're quite good. And I had a couple in the beans earlier. I don't know who else carries them, but I know that my Kroger does. So your Kroger, your Smith's, your Ralph's is a different person. Your Kroger's, your Smith's, your Ralph's. You might be able to find them. Wicked Minis. They are absolutely delightful in a bowl of soup or a bowl of beans. And they're pretty darn good just to sit around and munch on. Come in a little zippered pouch. Just a big old flavor bomb. Oh, too true. Maybe I'm late to the party. Flavio says, don't be calling us intimate parts, Bob.
Quit telling us what kind of parts we are, Bob.
That's for Flavio. Lots of hugs, my friend, Flavio says. I think we all hate orange by now. And I wasn't even thinking about it in that context, but that is absolutely true. It's like that scene from Casablanca where Ilsa, having stood up Rick and broken his heart in Paris, you know, caught up with him in Casablanca, you know, of all the gin joints in all the towns in all the world, that. And he says, she says, I remember when the Germans marched into Paris. And he says, how could I ever forget? The Germans wore gray, you wore blue. And she says, ah, yes, perhaps I'll wear that dress when they march out again. Well, maybe in the near future. Mind you, not blaze orange. But maybe in the near future we can like orange again. Or in the not-too-near future. Hopefully, by no later than January the 20th, 2021, we can like orange again. And that's a real problem for me, because it's one of my favorite colors. Both my junior high and my high school's colors. Junior high was orange and sky blue, and my high school was orange and brown. So, kind of had it foisted on me, but yeah, I liked orange. Oh, wait. That's a big cowbell for Jimmy. Did you say it was National Cat Day? So you were right, Friday. It wasn't about the cat. But today is. LOL. That's good. That's very good. And proof that what that Friday's program continues to live live on in the history of great wacky horn broadcasts. Lady B was on the same line of thought. Lady B says, "Let Steve from Georgia Stan know today really is about the damn cats." Very good, Lady B. Well played. And there we were. Toddling along. Oh, wait a minute. Okay, we got a cooking thing going on here. Soaking dem beans. Labor man Gary out in New Mexico says, "So, Bob, how do we properly soak the beans, and does it apply to all kinds? I've never seen a kind that it didn't apply to. Although old-world legumes like peas and garbanzos and lentils, those are all old-world, aren't they? I'm not so sure about, but generally speaking, they'll tell you on the package that the quick soak method is to pour boiling water over them. You know, you rinse them and you pick out all the little scraps. It's a natural food, so some little sticks and stones and dirt and crap can be in there. You rinse them real good. You make sure there's none of that. And then the quick soak method says you pour boiling water over them, let them sit for a couple of hours, and then start cooking them. And you can do that, but it does not have the salutary effect on the inherent gases inside the beans. You do the rinse and all of that and the pick through, and then a cold water soak for as long as you can wait, and you'll see it happen, because you'll see a foam form on the surface of the water that you're soaking in. Those are gases being released. Now, if you want to, you can speed that process along by sprinkling on some baking soda into the water, and that will create a chemical reaction that will draw that out further. You don't want to do that while they're cooking, though, because it will, A, explode the beans, and, two, add a shit ton of sodium to them. With the exception of the ham hock that was in this pot, there's not a lick of salt in them. But I hit them with some, I seasoned my bowl, because I now have some, with some of the Northwoods spicy seasoning from Penzi's, another unpaid product placement. And it just brought them to life. The only thing I didn't have was cornbread to go with them. Damn. If you use the baking soda on the beans in the cold water soak and you let them go for 24 hours or so, it'll cut down on the fart factor. Not to be crass, but it is what it is. It'll cut down on the fart factor significantly. And if you do have some ham hocks, say from Benton's Country Hams, unpaid product placement, It'll put them into the stratosphere. Ooh, that's good. It's good. It's good. Those ham hocks were sliced on the bandsaw there in the butcher shop, and I mean that fat layer just fell apart, and the ham went into crumbles around the little pieces of ham hock. But ooh, I mean that's pretty much hillbilly heaven. At some point in time, however, we've got to get into the meat of the program. Yes, Northwoods Fire Seasoning. Because there's Penzi's Northwoods Seasoning, and then there's the Northwoods Fire. I have a big one of the regular and a small one of the fire. And I'm a fire kind of guy. Notice the Kincaid fire. No, we'd probably better not. No. I had absolutely nothing to do with that. But I like spicy. And it really did. It worked wonders. Hey, there's an idea. Brother Deacon Asa says, maybe we can start calling it Feline Friday on the Horn to commemorate last Friday's infamous roundtable. There's an idea. That's a fine idea. But yeah, today was National Cat Day. And it was driven by the fact that the internet apparently exists primarily to expose people to cute pictures of cats. And has for years on end. Agnes and I saw some positively adorable little kittens learning to play in a video the other day over on Twitter, and the awe that we both let go of probably could be heard in space. And National Cat Day was cruising along quite nicely, thank you very much. Until Matt Getz wandered into the thick of things. And of course, Matt Getz is an idiot. Foursquare, blithering idiot. National Cat Day was trending on Twitter. But then, like I said, Matt Getz happened. And then everything changed. And it went from National Cat Day plummeted on the trend list as a new hashtag appeared in the universe. And that hashtag was Matt Getz is a tool. It worked out like this. By 3 o'clock this afternoon, Matt Getz as a tool was way far outstripping National Cat Day as a hashtag. And somebody happened to ask Matt Getz about it. And he said he kind of liked it. And posted a picture of a little video I came in like a wrecking ball, you know, showing the guy with the sledgehammer from the Miley Cyrus video. He really shouldn't have done that, you know. Matt Getz, just as a refresher, is the DUI evading maggot who is a son of privilege in every sense of the word, who represents the same kind of Republicans that Joe Scarborough used to represent up in L.A., you know, the Florida Panhandle, otherwise known as Lower Alabama. And away it went. Matt Getz is a tool. And a picture of Matt Getz earnestly shaking hands with Roger Stone while a guy behind him holds up a sign with an arrow pointing toward Matt Getz that reads, Tool! My friend Joshua Holland, who writes for The Nation, posted, calling yourself a tool to own the libs Sounds about right with this guy. And that's what kind of day it pretty much was. But yes, Matt Gaetz is, in fact, a tool. Flavio, with a note, says, you mentioned Barron's absence at the Astros-Nationals game, but you didn't mention the ovation that Chef Jose Andres got when he threw the first pitch at the game. I thought we did mention Jose Andres. Andres. Tell people how Trump mistreated Chef Andres when he was kicked out of a Washington, D.C. party because he made precious Iwanka my daddy, Trump Kushner, uncomfortable. How he ran soup kitchens in Puerto Rico after Hurricane Maria, volunteering his time and money. How he fed out-of-work government workers after they were put out of work during the Trump shutdown, the longest government shutdown in this country's history. Yep. And I have a feeling that was planned specifically for Nitwit Nero's benefit. Chef Jose Andres was the restaurateur who was scheduled to go in and do the restaurant in that tacky-ass hotel that they put in the old post office building on Pennsylvania Avenue in D.C. And then Trump started blathering about Mexican rapists. Jose Andres said, can't cope, not going to do it, not going to work with a guy who does that. My reputation would be destroyed. And so he pulled out. And then there was a lawsuit, and the maggots, you know, well, Donald Trump lost. So much losing, because Donald Trump doesn't know how to win lawsuits. And so Chef Jose Andres was invited to throw out the ceremonial first pitch at Game 5 of the World Series. Game 6 is tonight, by the way, and here's hoping Strasburg can push it to Game 7 for the Nats. But later on, Chef Jose Andres thanked the Nationals and their fans for their kindness and generosity toward, as he said, an immigrant like me, or words to that effect. And it's a West Virginia embarrassment day, too. You know, every now and then we get a story out of somewhere else of somebody being an asshole, and I get to think, well, you know, at least today West Virginia's getting some relief. Nope. Not today. For years, I have referred to a dude by the name of Alex Mooney, who is... he's one of the three members of the House of Representatives for this benighted state, this poor, tormented state, this state that the rest of the country has sat idly by while it was abused for the last 100 years and went, cool. It's just hillbillies. Well, I want to make something abundantly clear here. Alex Looney Mooney is not a hillbilly. He is only scarcely a West Virginian. He's a Marylander. Because, see, back in the day, Alex Mooney tried really hard to carve himself out a political career in Maryland. But the Marylanders really didn't want to let him go very far because, well, he's a jackass and an idiot. If we were to reconstitute the Jackacid Society from Pogo and Walt Kelly, he would be a charter member. Oh, he's a teabagging, maggoting, trumpansy, birther, deather, booger eater of the first order. And in fact, alongside my Congress critter, Carol Miller, who never makes an official decision without first taking it to Jesus in prayer, only to find out that Jesus is a bigger Republican than she is, apparently, or at least in her mind. The voices in her head tell her that. Well, they were both part of the riot last week. And today, Looney Mooney, who is not a West Virginian, will never be a West Virginian, if he eats beans and cornbread till hell freezes over and munches on ramps every spring and goes mushroom hunting, deer hunting, squirrel hunting, and fishing, and everything else West Virginians love to do, will never be a West Virginian. He is a Marylander and a Republican. Well, Looney Mooney, and this is the guy who inside the skiff last week recorded things with his cell phones and with his cell phone and then sent it out for public consumption. It was involved in the pizza ordering. God almighty, why do we let these people anywhere near the levers of power? Well, he tried it again today. This neo-maxi Zoom dweeby from Maryland, who represents the 2nd Congressional District of West Virginia, tried to crash the testimony of Lieutenant Colonel Vindman today and was denied entrance, of course, because he is not on the committee. Only committee members are allowed inside for these depositions, and that's what they essentially are, depositions. Both sides get to ask questions. The Republicans have as much rights as the Democrats do. But Looney Mooney isn't on the committee, and he was turned away because he doesn't serve on the committee. So then he went to Twitter and said, "Today I was once again denied the opportunity to attend the secret so-called impeachment hearings. I will continue to fight on behalf of my constituencies and expose this sham process and stand with President Donald Trump." Yeah, okay. Here's the thing. There were lots, and I know that's a complicated mathematical term, but there were lots of Republicans in there. Here. Let's see. Who was in that hearing room that Alex Looney Mooney could have gone to and said, "Could you tell me what went on in the secret impeachment hearings today?" Well, that would be Devin Nunez of California, Mike Conaway of Texas, Michael Turner of Ohio, Brad Wenstrup of Ohio, Chris Stewart of Utah, Rick Crawford of Arkansas, Elise Stefanik of New York, Will Hurd of Texas, John Ratcliffe of Texas, and Kevin McCarthy of California. I don't know if Looney Mooney doesn't know where these where these people's offices are, or maybe they don't speak to him because he's a... No, because they're big maggots like he is. It just might be that he was trying to get his nose up in the close and smelly on Donald J. Trump because he thinks that plays well with the rubes back home. That's right, 15 minutes to go in the first hour of the program, and with that reference, I have ruined dinner in the Eastern time zone. A number of people responding to Looney Mooney saying, for instance,
I was once again asked to follow the rules that were put in place by Republicans back in 2015 when they were having all those hearings about Benghazi and her email.
One person tweeting, today's life lesson, I can fucking explain it to you. I can't fucking understand it for you. And of course, he's going to get a chance to find out everything that went on in there after a vote takes place on Thursday. And we'll get to that in a second. One individual tweeted, and this is just delightful. This is Alex. Alex doesn't understand how committees work. Don't elect Alex. Well, we've been trying to get rid of him, but we keep running little Joe Manchin clones here. And people tend to, when given an opportunity to vote for either a real honest-to-God maggot Republican or a maggot Republican light, they'll choose the real deal every time. As for Carol Miller, Kelly reminds us, she's not from West Virginia either, Bob. I guess we can't just have any homegrown legislators anymore. How about David McKinley, Kelly? You got anything on him? Is he from West Virginia? I mean, Shelley Moore Capito, the senator, she was raised more or less around D.C. because her... Well, no, she was raised in West Virginia. Archmore, yeah, no. And maybe there's not so much to be said for being from West Virginia either, because Shelley Moore Capito, and Joe Manchin were... Well, you can't get any more West Virginia than those two. I mean, Shelley was the daughter of the single most corrupt man ever to be governor of West Virginia until the present jackass took office. And one may hope that Jim Justice, like Shelley Moore Capito's daddy, will eventually do time. Graft, corruption, things like that. Alex Mooney. Just remember, he's going to be one of your bigger jackass maggots.
But I'm sure Trump loves him. He loves him.
Yeah, thanks for the reminder. Thanks for the reminder, Kelly. Carol, Crazy Cat Lady Miller. Praying to Jesus and finding out Jesus wants her to vote just like she wanted to vote in the first place. Now, as for what's coming, well, by Thursday, a resolution will land on the floor of the House of Representatives to lay out the procedure for going forward on the impeachment process. If you want to, you can go over to docs.house.gov/bills this week and look up HRES 660, or just go to docs.house.gov and search HRES 660, and you'll find the resolution being tendered for the impeachment process. And I give big props to Nancy Pelosi on this one, because she weathered an onslaught by the maggots screaming,
"Oh, she doesn't even have, she ain't got no vote. You got to vote, goddammit. Got to have a vote. You can't have an impeachment hearing. Can't have impeachment without voting first."
No, you dumbasses. You vote at the end on the impeachment articles.
Oh, no. God damn it, no.
So, Jim McGovern of Massachusetts, who chairs the House Rules Committee, submitted the resolution. And it basically puts jurisdiction on the Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, the Committees on Financial Services, Foreign Affairs, Judiciary, Oversight, Reform, and Ways and Means, are directed to continue their ongoing investigations as part of the existing House of Representatives inquiry into whether sufficient grounds exist for the House of Representatives to exercise its constitutional power to impeach Donald John Trump, President of the United States of America. Section 2 is called Open and Transparent Investigative Proceedings by the Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. They're going to get what they wanted, the Republicans, but they're going to find out they didn't want it nearly as badly as they thought they wanted it. No. What the resolution lays out, and it will probably pass. God, if it doesn't, make a list of the Democrats who mugwumped it. Oh, that's a good question, Brother Deacon Asa. Does we celebrate Trump's pie hole on this day? What with it being part of a cat's anatomy and all? Referring, of course, to Donald Trump's cat's ass mouth and the cat's ass mouth that seems to be a genetic trait of that bunch. I wank him a daddy, Trump Kushner has it. Don Jr., Beavis has it. Butthead has it. You know, Uday and Kuday. Let's don't say we didn't. But they're gonna have the hearing on, or not hearing, but they're gonna have the vote on Thursday. It should pass, and it will set rules in motion that will probably result in the impeachment of Donald Trump on whatever charges they bring forth. And of course, once it passes, the Republicans will scream, "Oh, God damn it, it's unconstitutional. You can't impeach the president when he's a Republican. God damn it, we love our God Emperor." But it will be an official statement that there are multiple impeachment inquiries into Donald Trump. That's what that passage I just read, laying out the names of the committees, was all about. It confirms that Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, Ways and Means, Oversight and Reform, Judiciary, Foreign Affairs, Financial Services, are all looking into it and developing their own particular niche evidence as to whether or not he should be impeached. Darlene, the House doc URL is https://, there's no www, docs.house.gov, and it's under bills this week, but if you just go to docs.house.gov, I suspect there's a search bar there, and you look up HR 660, or HRES 660. And it's going to be a far more fair process than anything that the Republicans did during the great cleanest hunt, when the entire Republican Party, despite all its protestations of its manly heterosexuality, found itself hopelessly obsessed with one particular penis from Arkansas. The rules in the resolution say that Adam Schiff and Devin Leaks Like a Sieve Nunez will both get extra time to question witnesses beyond the normal procedure at the discretion of Adam Schiff. And that it can go up to 90 minutes, but no further. They both get a chance. But Schiff gets the say-so on whether they do it. And over in that self-same select committee on intelligence, the GOP is going to get to ask Adam Schiff to call witnesses. The only requirement being that they make some sort of a showing of relevance. Any such request shall be accompanied by a detailed written justification of the relevance of the testimony of each requested witness to the investigation. So, in other words, if they say, yeah, but we want to bring in Laura Ingraham and Sean Hannity because they know all about it, they're going to have to go the extra mile to prove that those fuckers are relevant. I'm guessing that's not going to happen. Stephen New York pointing out, I can't wait to see how many of these maggots won't even vote on the resolution. Mark my words, that will happen. Can't vote yes, can't vote no. Because got no spine. Hoo-ah. And even if Adam Schiff turns him down, the ranking member can still ask the full committee to vote on whether to bring in whoever it is he wants to testify. Yeah, my money is that there will be a request that Hillary Clinton come to testify, or Joe Biden, or Hunter Biden, but certainly not Lev and Igor, or Rudy Giuliani, who's already blown off a subpoena. Yeah, that won't happen. And ultimately, the Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence will issue a report on all of the skullduggery relating to Ukraine. And it will be public. And Bill Barr, the prosecution, won't be able to redact it or hide things. And then, after the committee's work has been done, and the report's been generated, and all the committees have said, we've gone as far as we can go, they will then turn over the evidence that they have developed to Representative Gerald Nadler and the House Judiciary Committee. And the House Judiciary Committee will then, if it has been deemed worthwhile, draft articles of impeachment. So it's in House Judiciary that the determination will be made just exactly what to charge Donald J. Trump with. And this is where all the frustration comes in about on
our side. Yeah, but we got to impeach him for the children in the cages. And we got to impeach him for we got to impeach him for what he did with because he's an unindicted co-conspirator with Michael Cohen. And we got to for ignoring the subpoenas, for withholding withholding his taxes. And I'm not selling any of those issues short. But I am saying that you only go with the charges that are strongest, based on the principle that strong arguments never make weak arguments stronger, but weak arguments have a profound ability to make strong arguments weaker. And once the House Judiciary Committee has done its work, they will hand out articles of impeachment if they see fit to draft them and say, these are the ones that we want to go to the floor for a full vote of the House. So we have some clarity. High clarity. And in the meantime, the Republicans are finding the thin, thin reed to which they cling to be getting thinner, drier, and more brittle, and more difficult to hang on to. Well, Suman is keeping track. Subject line: third pumpkin spice latte ruined, Bob. I've concluded there is a correlation, not causation, between my purchasing a pumpkin spice latte and its ruination by a reference to the Clementine Caligula's ass. Today was the third successive ruined latte. I have learnt my lesson. Keep up the good work. Send me a bill, Suman. We'll find a good independent coffee joint out there, and I'll do my best to set you up for the ones I've ruined. We're at three now, right? But it can't be Starbucks. It has to be a good, local, hardworking folks trying to, yeah. And if they were a bunch of wild-eyed liberals, that'd be cool, too. Well, darn. Steve letting me know that White Rose went belly up. That's weird, because I haven't seen any buffering or anything, and we're cruising merrily along. So now we have a resolution. The resolution will lay out rules. Set your clocks and calendars for Thursday, because there will, of course, be debate on this resolution. And there should be, the pissing and moaning on the part of the maggots, again, will be audible aboard the International Space Station as they cry and complain that it's impossible to impeach their god emperor. How do I know? Because it's my job to know these things. David in South Carolina, Stan, subject line, baking. I was baking cinnamon sugar butter-coated tortilla chips. Thanks! Ooh, those sound like sopapillas. And I rent them. Oh, okay. Well, thank you, Randy and PA. Both White Rose Society's horn streams are fine. So maybe restart your player, Steve. Yeah, I know, Monique. It's hard to wrap your head around. And Monique pointing out, Republicans ruin everything. That's why they're so miserable. They know no one wants to be around them unless that person is getting money. How many people live in the towns these Freedom Caucus members are from? Well, it's not towns, Monique. Because of the constitutional rules of apportionment, every member of the House of Representatives represents roughly the same number of people. So, for instance, a couple of city blocks in Queens might have a congressperson, while it requires everywhere from Cabell County to Berkeley County in West Virginia to have a Congress critter. So that's how that works. Now, Monique says, now the morons got what they wanted. Open hearings. What's going to be the next white male privilege victim oppression excuse for their obstruction? Oh, it's going to be flat out that you can't impeach Donald Trump because he's Donald Trump. I wish I was kidding, but I'm not. It's there, ripped from the headlines today. And it's just stupid. But then again, it's coming out of the mouth of Iwankamadaddy Trump's husband mouth. Now, he gave the interview, Jared Kushner did, to Israel's Channel 13 News, and a reporter by the name of Barak Ravid. I'm surprised that Jared Kushner would even be caught dead speaking to anyone named Barak, but, well, he spells it different. And speaking to Barak Ravid of Channel 13 Eyewitness Action News Team Coverage, Israel, Jared said, Donald Trump is unimpeachable. Okay? He's the President of the United States, and the President of the United States, by operation of the Constitution, most by God assuredly can be impeached upon a finding by the House of Representatives that he is engaged in treason, bribery, or high crimes and misdemeanors, which Alexander Hamilton defined as, and I'm paraphrasing, bad acts by great men. And he gets impeached. So Jared Kushner, who, by the way, remember, his crooked criminal daddy bought his way into, I think it was Harvard, wasn't it? He's not exactly a super genius, you know, like Don Jr., Beavis. He said, at this point, they investigated him over and over and over again. I think the American people are sick and tired of it. While they focus on that, the president's record of accomplishments is unimpeachable, and he's going to continue to do the things that the American people care about. In Congress, if they want to be part of the work we're doing to try to make the country stronger and the country more prosperous, they're welcome to join us. If they want to play silly games, that's what the Constitution is to Jared Kushner, a silly game. Yeah, at this point in time, I think there are enough failures coming out of Harvard. We ought to think about maybe dismantling the place.
If they want to play silly games, we'll obviously deal with that in an appropriate manner, but we're not going to let that distract us as an administration.
President is unimpeachable. Well, Jared, you not particularly smart person, and I use the word person loosely, I have a feeling you might be about to find out that that is simply not true. Oh, and by the way, I've been kind of sitting on this story for a little while. We might, but this seems like a more than appropriate time to bring it up. The Attorney General in the state of Maryland. A fellow by the name of Brian Frosch filed a lawsuit recently against Westminster Management, saying Westminster Management and the rental property owners misrepresented the quality of the rental units and the level of maintenance that they would provide, and they routinely failed to address hazardous conditions on the properties. Westminster Management is owned by
Jared Kushner.
And and the Attorney General of Maryland says that they engaged in, well...
Jared Kushner did, and his company...
unfair or deceptive rental practices, and at the same time ran rodent-infested apartments in Baltimore and the surrounding region. Jared is, in fact, a slumlord. All this work was done by the Consumer Protection Division of Frosch's office. And they fought not just against Westminster Management, but 25 other slumlords whose properties it managed. Quote, victimized consumers, many of whom are financially vulnerable at all stages of offering and leasing the units in Maryland. They committed hundreds of thousands of violations of consumer protection laws. And as of this story coming out a few days ago, the Kushner companies didn't really have much to say about it. Prior, they said,
we refuse to be extorted by an ambitious attorney general who clearly cares more about scoring political points than fighting real crime and improving the lives of the people of Maryland.
That was Laurent Morali, Kushner Company's CEO. They rejected a settlement offer from Frosch's office after 2 years of negotiations. Frosch, meanwhile, responded saying that what those turds were claiming was ridiculous. I referred to them as turds, not Frosch. He said, in fact, that the Westminster Kushner gang of slumlords had engaged in an extraordinary panoply of violations of the rights of tenants. They were cheating tenants before, during, and after their tenancy. And when I tell you there were hundreds of thousands of violations of the Consumer Protection Act, it just begins to convey the seriousness of the charges. They caused serious harm and suffering to people who lived in their units. Now, remember, Jared is such a fuck-up that he couldn't even run a building at 666 Park Avenue, or was it 5th? I can't remember. My New York City geography is as bad as it is in California. Without damn near going bankrupt, and only still has it because he was bailed out by the Cutteries, is it? The folks from the well-heeled barbarians, right? And by well-heeled, I mean rich. Frosch continued. Attorney General Frosch said, it has nothing to do with the administration. This is purely a Maryland issue. A Maryland management company and landlords that we feel have repeatedly and consistently violated our Consumer Protection Act. It doesn't make any difference who owns it. But Jared Kushner and his company have scammed their tenants in these filthy apartments for years. And the bill is finally due. Ah, thank you. Lee in New York, who knows the lay of the land much better than I, says it's 666 Fifth Avenue. Maybe they could make a little more money off of it if they changed that 666 to Ronald Wilson Reagan 666. That's why I'm not a hotshot real estate operator. That's true. Monique points out, Jared's dad sent his sister, Jared's aunt, a tape of her husband cheating on her because the dad was mad about a business deal. Remember, Chris Christie put Jared's dad in jail. They're all fucked up. Oh, yeah, they're nasty. Having wealth denotes neither intelligence nor decency, and in many instances, the exact opposite. Oh, Lee, you're bringing too much intellect into the party. Subject line: ruining dinner. Why do Horn community members with sensitive digestive systems eat during your show? Just wondering. Well, it's not even necessarily the eating. Sometimes it's just in the prep, Lee. Baking, asked James in Illinois. No, but I was roasting Indian Arabica Monsoon Malabar coffee beans, that is. Good stuff. Yeah, it's kind of hard to fuck up coffee roasting, so. I'm glad I didn't ruin it for you, James. The idea that Jared thinks that impeaching his daddy-in-law is unprecedented means that they didn't do much for him in the English department at Harvard, because he clearly does not know what the word unprecedented means. Brother Deacon Asa reminding us, Kushner owes $12.5 billion with a B dollars on that pile of bricks. Yes, it's 666 Fifth Avenue. And Daddy gave a $2.5 million donation to Harvard in order to get little Jared's foot in the door. And then Jared's daddy did a time in the big house via Chris Christie for his financial skullduggery and sleazy wheelings and dealings. And somehow or another, we haven't even gotten to the a great big whopping big deal testimony of today. I read his statement. It was published beforehand. I trust you may have as well. No, Sparky asking, do you have to put your nuts in a vise to get that voice, Bob?
No, actually, this is how I sound all the time, and I have to,
reach way down and strain all my gut muscles to sound like this.
It's exactly the opposite, really.
What's that? Well, this doesn't happen all the time. How can I help you, Steve? What's up?
Brother Bob, what's going on, my man?
Oh, you know, just trying to get through Titanic Tuesday without my head blowing up. A little old pumpkin haid.
I hear you, brother. I didn't realize that Cat Night was going to be taken so seriously with me and Billable Rick. I really thought it was about the cat.
Oh, don't start again. You're trying to revive it. You little attention prostitute.
Little whore. Yeah, I know. Did you happen to see, and you may have mentioned this, fearless leader, dim leader, get booed at the Nats game last night?
Oh, that was all about last night, man.
That was
we were on that like ducks on a June bug.
And of course, your folks out there at Morning Joe and Mika, they come out and scolded us for treating the president.
Oh, they kept scolding today. Mika's probably still scolding. It's a new game with her called Scold the Proles.
My God. I mean, I'm glad that he got booed. It shows everybody around the world, of course, you know, the World Series is a world event that not all of us are, you know, these attention-grabbing dweebs.
Neo-maxi-zoom dweebies. If you recall the dialogue from The Breakfast Club.
Yes. Yes. But I was glad it happened, and we had it to do over. If I was out there, I'd be booing too. Lock him up, man.
Well, hopefully people will take the cue. But see, they don't let him go anywhere. They generally don't, and after this, they won't let him go anywhere where the general public can register their disdain for him. He will only be seen in friendly audiences like maggot clan rallies.
He's so stupid. He was actually standing up and like taking a bow when he was being booed.
Oh, he was grinning early on, and then he heard the booing. I mean, you can see it on his face when he realizes he's being booed. You can see it on melanomas, too.
do you think she was reveling in that? I mean,
No.
She has to mount that.
Don't.
I'm
no.
going to ruin dinner somewhere, somehow.
Yeah, we're dining in the central time zone now, man.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's up there with fart soup, but no, it's worse. It really is. She has to mount that, so maybe
you
she
did it anyway, didn't you?
Well, I had to.
I personally think they don't. I think one, little Baron is Eric's. And because he looks a hell of a lot more like Eric than he does Donald. And I don't think he's been able to do anything for years.
According
I mean, that's why,
Stormy,
that's why, that's why, that's,
to work with,
well, that's
so.
Why Stormy had to, or Stormy or whoever the other one was, had to spank him with a rolled up copy of Forbes.
That said, it looked like Mario Kart. Here we go again.
You can't let it go, can you?
Oh, but I heard Lady V boning on me about Cat Night, and I was like, "What is she talking about?" And then it dawned on me. Oh yeah, Cat Night.
Yeah, it wasn't. Okay. It wasn't Friday, but today it is, being how today's National Cat Day.
Okay. But we're so fortunate to have this group, Bob. I mean, we can all come together and we can all, you know, just sort of lean on each other.
Well, you know what? You're on Flavio's shit list now. Flavio said, uh-oh. I just threw my food into a Tupperware and threw it in the fridge. Fuck it.
Sorry, Flavio. My sincerest apologies, my friend.
Oh, no. The horse is out of the burning. Horses are out of the burning barn now, man. You can't.
You can't pull it back, huh?
Can't. This is a nauseating bell that cannot be nauseatingly unrung.
Oh.
Oh wow. Okay. Wait a minute. Now that's for Steve in New York. A brother member of the fraternity of Steve's.
And a buddy of mine, so I hope he took it easy on me, yeah. You know?
No, he didn't say anything at all about you.
Okay.
Right. Boron's daddy is a turkey baster. Yeah, but whose baby gravy is it? Oh!
Oh, no! Oh, my goodness. My goodness. Be best.
I really don't care, do you?
No. But I just wanted to call and check in. I'll let you get back to your show. I just wanted to let you and Miss Agnes and Ferg know that we love you guys, man. We really do.
Oh, I know. No, this happy community, we happy few, is something really special.
Well, it is to me, too, and I appreciate appreciate every one of y'all. I really do.
Well, Jim's trying to make it better. Trump's sex life? I'd rather a rendezvous with a goat.
Why would you say that?
Nah, that's just dad.
Right.
You know
Brother
that
Bob,
joke, right? Yeah, I'm not going to tell it.
I'll let you get back to your show. Thanks for taking my call, man.
Oh, thanks for making it, brother.
So it's always good to talk to you. You call me if you need anything, okay?
Absolutely, I will. Later.
All right, love you, man. Bye.
Bye. Our buddy Steve from Georgistan. And what's that? High-pitched voice, Lee in New York says,
sounds like Mickey Mouse to me.
I think Mickey's a little bit higher than that, but yeah. Yeah. Jim says, Steve laughs like Andy Devine, and that's a high compliment. Andy Devine had a wonderful laugh. You know, somehow or another, we're gonna get through this program. Like I said, been kind of a rough day, so pardon me if I just try to lighten things a little bit. Let's check in with Tracy real quick. Hey, Tracy.
Hey, honey. How you doing?
You know, it feels like the top of my head's going to come off, but, you know, that'll pass.
Did you eat something? Did you close your eyes for a minute? Did you take some deep breaths and hydrate?
No, I did all of that. I did. Okay. And, you know, I think I'm going to sit in the middle of the floor and cross my legs and stare at my navel and think about lotuses and say om a lot afterward.
Well, yeah, I had one of those days. Woo motherfucking saw.
My daddy plays dominoes better than your daddy plays dominoes. My father was a fireman.
So today was drive Will and his mother around.
Through the fires?
We had... No. The fire is only 15% contained at the moment, the one in Brentwood, but now they're screaming that we might get winds. We're having
help me here. Isn't what was known once upon a time far and wide in America as the Clampett Mansion, isn't that in Brentwood? It's not really in Beverly Hills?
I believe so.
Yeah. I hope it's okay.
So, I hope it's okay too.
If they need to, they can get a bucket brigade going from the cement pond.
But speaking of the Clampets, trip this. So I was watching an episode of 2020 on Hulu, and they were talking about Dorothy Stratton, the Playboy bunny that was murdered by her husband.
Yeah, and the movie was what, Star 80?
Star 80. And guess who they interviewed?
Who?
Jethro.
Max Baer Jr.?
Apparently, he was a friend. Motherfucker, with your turn? Not you, Bob. Jesus. Sorry, fam. I can't stand driving behind stupid-ass people. Anywho, that's what I was talking about. Who fucking saw? So apparently he was a friend of the husband. And, the way he talked about that man. But you could tell. I mean, first of all, I didn't even know he was still alive. That part. But he was talking about how terrible he was, what a piece of shit he was. And on and on and on that he was just back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And all I could think of was Jeff Green. I was thinking of
that immediately made you think of Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags.
Yes.
Former White House spokescreep Jeff Green Bodine.
Yes, and I'm sitting there like, wow. No, it was so.
Well, you know, Max is the only remaining surviving cast member.
Oh, what?
Nancy Culp. Maybe Nancy Culp.
Nancy Culp is so old. Wait a minute. She was old when the Beverly Hillbillies were on.
No, that's Irene Ryan.
So wait, Nancy Culp. Wait,
Miss Jane.
Miss Jane, yeah, right.
No, she died in 1991. No. Yeah, she died
That's
in 1991.
Like, wait a minute.
She was 70.
Wait a minute, she was old.
The only one left is Max Baer Jr.
Wow. When did Ellie Mae die?
Last year, year before.
Okay. Yeah, because when I saw him, I'm like, holy shit, Jethro's still alive. Wow. Trip that. And I was just like, woo-wee. But no, it was a really sad story. This girl, just the back and forth. And then Hugh Hefner and Peter Bogdanovich, whatever his name.
Bogdanovich.
I can never pronounce that. Thank you. They got into a match about whose fault it was that she was murdered, and woo-de-woo, on and on and on and on and on. I'm like, well, you know, when you put women out as, you know, property, and that, you know, everybody, you know, can have a piece, then, you know, what are you going to do? But enough of that. So, anywho, I had, because I meant to say something to you about that, and of course, and then you said the Clampett Mansion, so I'm like, holy shit, I need to say that, because if I don't,
well,
I'll never
remember.
See,
that's how that's how the thought waves flow through the community, Tracy.
That part. So back to so the fires, like I said, the Brentwood fire is only like 15% contained, and now we're on a high wind advisory alert. They're talking the winds whipping up around up to like 80 miles per hour.
Yeah, that's tropical storm low grade hurricane force.
Yeah, and there's no rain, Bob.
Where's it come from, Tracy? I know that's a stupid question, but I mean, does it blow east to west, west to east, north to south?
Baby, you know what? I do not know. I have never known, because this is just, it's just, you know, I have no idea. I really don't know. But what I do know is that I'm fucking glad I don't live in a goddamn hill. Because even where I live, where we had that fire that hit the Sepulveda Basin last week, that was too close for comfort. On top of the fact, and we have been on the fire department, on the city, on the county, on the state. There's this field that is just, and there's really nothing on it behind our house, and nobody seems to know who's in charge of this field. And there, you know, especially now with these embers going from anywhere, that we're kind of nervous as to whether or not, you know, our backyard can seriously catch on fire. That part. And
which would suck.
Planes. We called our congressman. We've called our councilman. We've called our congressman. We've called our state representative. Everybody's like, well, call this person. No, it's the ultimate pass the motherfucking buck. Nobody knows who's in charge.
Well, I mean,
what.
can't you go downtown to the county clerk's office and or wherever the county seat is? I mean, and go through the deed books and find out who owns it.
Well, it's not even. Caltrans is on it. They park their trucks on it. But then they say that it's not their...
Breathe.
Okay. Ooh, motherfucking saw. It's just... I'm telling you, it's just the stupidest thing.
Well,
ever.
With the Getty fire raging and the warnings of the Santa Ana wind... I went back and reopened my Raymond Chandler story, Red Wind.
Woo!
And I mean and you know he was a Californian as well, and he really makes it seem like it's something intense. I'd never heard it described or never read it described as intensely. I mean, all I knew was, here come those Santa Ana winds again, you know, Steely Dan.
No,
but,
it can be scary. I mean, it has, it can change people. I mean, it can make people crazy.
Well, and that's exactly, and I'm going to go back to, because he sets the scene in Red Wind immediately. And he says, and I think I've shared this before, there was a desert wind blowing that night. It was one of those hot, dry Santa Anas that come down through the mountain passes and curl your hair and make your nerves jump and your skin itch. On nights like that, every booze party ends in a fight. Meek little wives feel the edge of the carving knife and study their husbands' necks. Anything can happen.
Yeah, that's about right. Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's intense.
I'm telling you, it's like Santa Ana's make people do stupid shit. And I mean, fortunately for me, I've never.
But I mean, it makes me wonder. I mean, is life so tranquil otherwise? Because I mean, there are places, you know. No. For instance, there's a place in that's advertised on TV, a place in Indiana where the wind always blows. You know, for instance, I can't imagine trying to light a fire in my acorn cooker because it would just. I mean, it's frustrating enough. It's frustrating trying to use the propane griddle when there's a breeze blowing here because it makes it harder to get the heat up onto the griddle surface. But I guess because it's so hot.
It's really crazy. I mean, you know, like I'm 53. I've lived here all my life. And the Santa Ana's a part of, you know, it's just a part of being in California, in L.A. But, dude, this, what's happening here with these wildfires, I mean, we have had a fire every weekend this month.
Yeah.
Every single weekend.
And, I mean, it's part of the natural processes of the region. But not like this. And I guess this is the worst it's been in at least 10 years. But thankfully, we have Dave out there to explain it to us. So even a lifelong Angeleno like you, you're about to learn something new.
Dave who?
Just Dave. Dave, member of the community.
Okay. I thought it was going to be one of those ass. I thought it was going to be a Republican right winger.
No. Okay. This is real. It is a northeasterly wind, a stationary high pressure over the Pacific, and descending low pressure over the Rockies creates a gear effect. So, you know, like where they're grinding, like where two gears are grinding together.
Okay.
And it almost sounds like it's nearly cyclonic.
Sounds like that, too.
And Darlene just sent a note. She says, this is mind-blowing. From CNN, the Kincade Fire in Sonoma County has scorched more than 74,000 acres and destroyed more than 100 structures, according to Jonathan Cox, spokesman for California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection. The fire was threatening 90,000 more structures and 15% contained as of Monday. Driven by hurricane-force winds, the fire grew at a rate of one football field every 3 seconds when it first ignited last Wednesday. Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
That's like a tornado that won't quit.
Santa Ana's in Southern California. That's up north.
Yeah.
Oh, so that's not even that part.
Well, I guess that stationary high pressure can affect it all. And then the low pressure over the Rockies.
Because you asked a little while ago about Sparky, about the Santa Ana's, and he's in Northern California. That's all us. But like you said, when they come down, they can come from, but if you Google Santa Ana winds, and you know there's movie like you said. Well, look, you said Raymond Chandler wrote about it, and that was in what, the 30s or the 40s?
Probably the 40s.
Okay, and so I mean, there's songs about it, there's poetry about it. I mean, but again, yes, this is typically fire season in Southern California. But it's never, we've never had fire after fire after fucking motherfucking fire. This is out of hand. I mean, the thing is, California, that is our ecosystem.
They're calling the one down there, the where you are, the Getty Fire.
Uh-huh.
And I think most people have probably seen the view from the Getty Museum.
Uh-huh.
And it's breathtaking. It's beautiful.
is breathtaking. It's gorgeous.
And all that shit is on fire.
On fire. I mean, like yesterday.
I mean, there's some pretty precious stuff in the Getty Museum, right?
Yes, very much so. They closed the 101 north southbound from the 101 freeway to past Sunset. They closed Sepulveda.
What does that do in a massive urban area where people already lose their shit and engage in road rage? I mean, does it just elevate terrorism?
It's road terrorism, just like you said. I mean, fortunately for me, and my commute, I have Penny, so I don't have to engage. I don't have to go anywhere south in the mornings or anywhere we had the fire two years ago, or was it last? I'm losing track. When was the South? Was that last year? 2 years? Where am I? Was that shooting last year or was that 2 years ago? Shit. Fuck. I can't remember. Anyway, when they had to evacuate Thousand Oaks and Agoura Hills and all that, when they shut that in Calabasas, that shut everything down. But see, it's not as densely populated up there as it is down where, this fire hit, because you got the 405, and that's the main artery in and out of the valley. Plus, and then this morning, apparently, there was a jumper at the 101 freeway this morning. Well, it went from last night. It was like a 12-hour ordeal. The guy never jumped. Well, I don't know if it was a male or female, but they tied up. They closed the one. That was another thing this morning. They closed the 101 freeway in Hollywood for 12 hours. I can't even imagine.
I mean, that's economic. That's economic mayhem, isn't it?
Yes. That is a form of terrorism, because when you close down the 101, I mean, traffic is bad enough as it is, and see, the problem is because. Then you got all these people on the street trying to get, from what point A to point B. And those are the people that, not including the people that are already on the street that were avoiding, that normally avoid getting on the freeway as is. So now you got the people who's like, fuck it, I'm staying on the freeway anyway. I know it's traffic, but I'd rather stay on the freeway than be on, at least it's sort of moving and I don't have to at least deal with traffic lights. Now you got all those people who are forced off the freeway for 12 hours.
No, yeah. See, I guess it was probably 18 years ago our mountain caught fire here, and I was driving home from work up the mountain from Charleston to home, and it was after dark, and the whole mountain was on fire. And it was the most terrifying, awesome display I think I'd ever seen. And we stayed up all night just waiting to see, because it's not like this is civilization and people are going to tell you it's time to bug out. We stayed up all night watching to see if the hillside across from us was going to catch, to see if it was time to go.
I have been on the 405. And watched as the freeway, as I was on the freeway, and watched the fire jump from one side of the freeway to the other. Yeah, that part. So, so it's real. And we've had these conversations about, I don't care if I won the lotto today. Or whatever, and I won $500 million or whatever the case may be. What do we call it? I don't give a fuck money.
Yeah, rocket, even yeah, spaceship money.
Spaceship money. You could not pay me to move up into one of these places because one of the things they were talking about yesterday
And let me guess that moving up into the hills is moving on up, and you spend outrageous amounts of money for a footprint of land the size of a postage stamp, right?
Some of these places, not so much. Some of these places are palatial. They got some digs up there that, you know, they got some houses up there that's on some land. Don't get it twisted. But my thing is, those roads are very narrow for the most part. Because I've had pickups up there, like for kids and stuff. And now, I'm in a minivan, Bob. And if I have issues getting in and out of that bitch in a minivan, what is a fire truck going to do?
Oh, yeah. And with the winds that are generated by those things, a minivan is what we refer to around here as slab-sided. I remember back when we had a minivan, when we would drive across the New River Gorge Bridge and the winds would be going 60, 70, 80 miles an hour. It was something that I didn't care for and downright terrified Agnes. Because one minute you're in the right lane, and the next minute you're hoping that you're not going to bump the Jersey barrier on the left lane.
That part. Because, like, the other day, I was driving, and, you know, I'm pretty strong now, but I was holding on to the steering wheel for dear life because a wind, and then on top of that, because one of the things, because since I drive for a living and I have, you know, common sense, I do my damnedest to stay away from big rigs because, you know, can't see around them, and a good gust of wind gets a hold of them, and they go over, and you underneath the goddamn.
Yeah, that's what Terrace was talking about a couple of nights ago on his trip. He said, you know, he saw semis blown into the median, and it's interesting. You mentioned fires jumping the freeway. Jim just jumped in and said that's terrifying indeed, and that he hopes that you all will stay safe. But and you said, you know, jumping the highway. Matt just wrote in from San Francisco and said, for us in the Bay Area and further north, the winds are blowing from east to west, which due to the strong winds, the fires move quickly and are causing great damage. The Vallejo fire on Sunday was a rather small fire in comparison to the other fires. However, it made for exciting TV and much anxiety for us locals as it jumped the highway and caught people on the freeway as they were turned around from the Casinas Bridge as the flames reached for the sky right on the shoulder of the highway. I mean, this is,
yeah.
I find all this terrifying and heartbreaking and most fascinating, actually, because it highlights what a difference there is between east of the Mississippi and west of the Mississippi, and particularly west of the Rockies. You know, you get west of the Mississippi, the Great Plains and everything, and you get massive flooding that's only going to get worse. And you get west of the Rockies, there was a mindset as we spread across the continent that we could live anywhere we want to. And I don't mean to offend any of our any members of the Horn Family Community Congregation, say, in Las Vegas, but just a gentle reminder, human beings aren't supposed to live there in massive quantities. And the same can kind of be said for, like, Phoenix. Human beings aren't supposed to live in deserts by the millions of people. You have to engage in massive amounts of artificial infrastructure to make that possible. And, you know, we all know what anybody who's ever seen, say, Chinatown and the Two Jakes, you learn a little bit of the history of how water got brought to Southern California.
Yeah.
Because that wasn't a place that was really meant to support a huge human population.
Whoa.
But we do it anyway. Now, east of the Mississippi, and, you know, Texas, too, and Kansas, you know, in the southeast, tornadoes. Y'all don't really get that much in the way of tornadoes.
Mm-mm.
But, and you know, we get some flooding here. But one of the things about Appalachia is that it you know, when the giant six foot tall cockroaches who replace humanity start putting together our story, Tracy, they're going to look at Appalachia and what was done to it, and they're going to say, this was one of the better places on this continent to live. Why did they insist on fucking it up?
Money.
Because there's ample water here, and before we blew the mountains up, most of the rains would get soaked up, and if you didn't build in the floodplain, you were pretty safe. Not prone to mudslides that much. Not prone to tornadoes. Fairly temperate climate. And we fucked it all up. I mean, mm-hmm. because see, I'm...
Breathing.
Letting go now, letting go now, letting everything go. Ah, there are there were decisions made. For instance, you know, you get the settlements in what was then New Amsterdam, and the Massachusetts Bay Colony, because it's situated right by the seashore, and if you look back to the indigenous peoples who lived here first, they were wildly successful. Because it was like living in the grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
And then, because of unrestrained growth, and again, I'm not trying to piss off people in individual geographic areas, members of our little community congregation, but if you take one hard look at any big city in the United States, they are recipes for disaster. Every big city in the United States is a recipe for disaster. As much as I love them, they are recipes for disaster, because New York City can't feed itself for 2 weeks.
No.
Anything that stops food from moving into Boston, New York City, Philly, et cetera, 2 weeks max before it turns into Thunderdome.
The Purge. Hunger Games and shit. See, I mean, like you said,
and now with climate change being what it is,
sustainable.
Yeah, with climate change and sea level rise being what it is, the original motivating factor for building cities on the coast becomes not a bonus, but a curse. Not a blessing, but a curse. And we've done it to ourselves in the short span, Tracy, of 150, 175 years.
Who is it? Which of our members that lives in Florida? And he was talking about how they're still building houses on the beach.
Oh yeah, I think that's Scary Jerry and oh golly Moses, Jay Cruzen used to call in because he worked for the power company, and he would talk about how, you know, Miami and Miami Beach just flood when it rains, and then when the king tides come in, when you've got the combination of a high tide and a full moon, damn, there's water up to your knees all the time, and that used to be a once in a while event.
And once in a while.
And then there's my beloved New Orleans, most of which is below fucking sea level.
Yeah.
And you know, my sister and brother-in-law live down on the Gulf Coast in Alabama. They just harvested their satsumas, by the way. And you want to talk about some? They harvested their lemons and their satsumas. Yeah.
What's a satsuma?
A satsuma.
You said that. You act as though I should. You say that as though I should know what it is, Bob.
Well, I'm sorry. It's a kind of an orange. It's like a tangerine that tastes like honey.
Ooh, okay. So I had never heard of it.
There used to be a huge industry through there, but a hurricane came along and blew it away decades ago. but they just harvested theirs because it's, you know, that warm. And I think where their house sits might be 25 feet above mean sea level tops.
That's not good.
You know, David in South Carolina, Stan, just told me Charleston, South Carolina is building below sea level parking garages. Genius. Pure genius.
It's not like, okay, you know, back in the day, you know, you can kind of forgive shit like that. But you, at some point, the shit, the need, isn't there somebody that can have to say, dude, we can't build anymore?
Well,
it
but
doesn't
the,
matter
but
how
the,
much money and how much.
No, no, not as long as capitalism is the driving force. That is not going to happen. And you said, you know, back in the day it could be forgiven. The fact of the matter is, Tracy, back in the day, people built with more of a focus on the surrounding countryside. Whether it be, you know, when you get down south into the heat of Alabama, Georgia, and Mississippi and Louisiana, people built paying attention to where the sun rose and where the sun set. And
I think we had somebody, you guys had this conversation with the other while back about how the high ceilings and off the ground to get the air circulating and so the slaves can, you know, fan them better. I'm sorry, what?
Well, it's not just the big houses. I mean, you know, farmers built their cabins and whatnot, paying attention to which way the sun rose and set, where the weather came from. And it's
they don't do that anymore,
right? Because because in the post World War II world, it was a matter of putting up as many homes as possible to drive people out of rural America into urban America to serve. I mean, remember, my father, for instance, worked at a plant. Well, plant and plantation come from the same idea. Okay, and so people had to be driven out of rural America into concentrations of humanity so that capitalism could have them at hand to use them and work them for all of their natural born days in order to further the needs and goals of capitalism.
Oh, right. See, I'd be forgetting stuff like that, dude.
You know, it happened to my parents. It happened all over Appalachia. They call it the Hillbilly Highway. It ran north to Ohio and Michigan, and it ran south to North Carolina. Dwight Yoakam has a song from a million years ago called "Reading, Writing, and Route 23." And the hillbillies bugged out and thought that they were living the high life because, you know, they could get somebody to bring a quart of milk to their door every morning. You just got a note, Tracy, from Lady
what
B,
did I do?
From Lady B.
Oh, okay.
Subject line:
okay.
Where you live? Someday, Tracy, you may not have a choice. Blacks, poor people, and even middle class have always been forced to move from the good, safe, higher areas their ancestors may have inhabited to less desirable areas. New Orleans is a prime example, Florida too. Blacks were forced to live away from higher land in New Orleans until there were too many floods and hurricanes for rich white folks to handle. I don't doubt where you live will become the hipster rich place to live in 20 years. P.S. Bob Phoenix is another place humans should never have moved to. That's why I included it. Yeah. I want the warmth, you know. I've come here for the air. And lo and behold, some dude and his wife who moved from, I don't know, Michigan to Pennsylvania to Arizona. And those are the folks sitting around hollering, "God damn it, I love that Trump. Woo! MAGA, baby. CAGA. Keep America great again. Yeah." And the indigenous people who lived there said, "No, you know, we don't live here all the time. We just kind of move through. We go back and forth."
Yeah, we We didn't set up camp here to stay. We were here for a minute, and then we went about our business.
Yeah, we got what was good here and moved on. And see, the same thing will happen in South Florida. There are parts of the greater Miami area that are presently occupied by people who aren't that economic, that who don't have a lot of economic power, but it happens to be high ground.
Oh, they're about to get screwed.
Oh, they're gonna they'll get screwed, and they will get and they will get. I guess what can we create a new term? They'll get Andrew Jacksoned.
Yes.
Driven off their land.
They'll come up with some eminent domain or something, and say, well, you know, it's for the better good, and blah blah blah. They'll hike up their property taxes.
Yeah, it, well, it's like, exactly. It's like what happened to the Gullah people off the Georgia coast. A bunch of those islands had been inhabited for 200 years, but some rich white folks wanted that land, so they got the county commission to jack up the property rates so that the black folks who had lived there for 200 years, and I guess some poor whites too, probably, got run the hell right off because they couldn't afford to pay their taxes anymore.
All of a sudden, it's like, you can't afford your taxes. But I've been paying my... Yeah. So, I mean, it's like... Fortunately, Lady B, where I live in Encino is already hipster. So I think I'm safe for a while. Well, I'm 53, so hopefully in the next 20 or so years, I'll be, you know.
Well, you know you're hip when they name a movie after where you live. You know, Pauly Shore and what's his name in Encino Man.
Really? Really?
I'm sorry. Every time you mention that you live in Encino, I think of Encino Man.
So, yeah, well, you know, I mean.
It's like Agnes and I just on a lark trying to clear our heads from the, you know, from all the stress. The other night we noticed that Fast Times at Ridgemont High was on just okay, Prime, you know, Amazon Prime, you know, just watch it if you want to. And I was telling her, like.
You guys have not finished watching, haven't watched Pose yet, have you?
No, because things have just been a little too stressy around here. We are deep in escape mode.
And that will be the greatest escape ever.
But there's some serious weeping into the hankies too, right?
That's true, but
we've been doing a lot of that all by ourselves with no help.
Yeah, you don't need any help. I know.
One of the things, you know, talk about how things change. One of the things, we were watching it, and you know that movie takes place and centers around a particular mall in Southern California.
It's gone.
And I looked at Agnes and I said, you realize that vibrant mall no longer even exists? And she said, what? I said, yeah, it's gone.
It's Galleria.
And one of the, there's actually a subset of internet fascination with dead malls. There are people who go around and photograph dead malls. And they're,
seriously?
And they are creepy as shit.
Well, we have, the Galleria, they leveled it and they turned it into one of those outdoor thingies and they built a.
Oh shit. You were probably in that, weren't you? I mean, you've been in that Galleria.
Oh God. Dude, seriously?
You grew up in it, didn't you?
When I was in the sixth grade, they were building the bitch. Okay, it was at the intersection of the 405 and the 101 freeway in Sherman Oaks. Like, oh my God, totally.
All right, so more movie trivia. I always thought that the thinking. I mean, Fast Times at Ridgemont High was its own little cultural moment, but the other one that is not nearly as well known is Valley Girl.
Oh, Valley Girl.
Yeah. So at the end, when, what is it, Modern English and I Melt With You? I'll stop the world and melt with you. And they show the limo pulling into that massive, you know, 12 lanes of traffic. What highway is that?
You know, I haven't seen that movie in forever, but more than likely.
It's hard to find.
I actually own it.
you would.
I think I do own it. I'm pretty sure I have it on DVD. I might even have it on VHS.
And the soundtrack. The soundtrack to Fast Times was cool. The soundtrack to Valley Girl is fucking awesome.
Oh yeah, no, Valley Girl. See, now I'm going to go home and look, and because I'm pretty sure I own Valley Girl, because, like, you know, oh my God, I went to Jefferson High, and I graduated in, you know, 1984, like, you know, tubular, like, you know, loser, and, like, you know, L7 square. What?
I ain't saying nothing.
Now, imagine me, that's how I used to speak, and then take my happy black ass back to the hood.
God damn it, Tracy.
My life was fucking hell. Because, I was too black for the white folks in the valley and too white for the Negroes in the hood. I fit in nowhere. It was hell. Because the people that lived in my neighborhood, you just think you're better than us. And I'm like, no, I don't. I just don't. Because
how many times did you get told to stop talking white?
Every fucking day
just
of
checking.
My life. He's like a white girl. I'm like, no, that's just how I talk. I'm not trying to sound like a white girl. Because, you know, I grew up basically in West L.A., and I didn't move and lived and breathed around white people all my life until I was 14, 15 years old. By then, what is it? The die is cast. I can't go from, I had to learn. I had to learn how to be black. There's a line in a Lizzo song, I think it's Coconut Oil, and she says, back when I wasn't cool, and she's like, hell, I still ain't cool. You know, and that was me, because I was never cool. I was never one of the cool kids. So, you know, the only reason why I got away with people, you know, the white people thought I could dance is because, you know, they had no clue. I wouldn't dance around my black friends or family. Are you crazy? Because, you know, I dance like Whitney Houston and Oprah Winfrey. Neither one of those bitches could dance.
No. Well, at least you didn't. I mean, that far back, that hadn't happened yet, but, you know, Elaine.
No. Now, see, no, I didn't look like I was having, you know, an epileptic seizure or what have you. No. In all honesty, I can do, you know, the side to side, keep a beat and stuff like that, but nothing too extravagant. And like I said, I knew my limitations. This is why I never pledged the black, I never pledged the sorority anyway, but I always wanted to be a Delta Sigma Theta, you know. But I wouldn't pledge because we had to step. And I'm, oh no. So I never pledged a sorority because we had that part. What that has to do with serving your community, I do not know. But yeah, I never pledged.
Well, Scott in San Diego says, I'm with Tracy on this. There's no damn way I'd live in the effing wilderness. I'm a city boy. P.S. Gag me with a spin.
Do you realize
that everything you're doing there is actually the birth of a vocal verbal linguistic phenomenon that tortures us to this day?
Yes.
Upspeak, no. The dreaded upspeak.
Yes. Yes.
Where even simple statements end up sounding like questions.
I'm like, oh my God, like, what are you saying?
And that makes me want to eat dirt and run rabbits. It drives me bananas. That and vocal.
I know. And
that and vocal fry.
and this thing is like, I'm saying it's like, ooh, that's another one of those things that drives me nuts. And I worked very hard on not doing that. But listening to Meghan McCain is,
The only thing that makes that bearable for me is for when is every time I see her, I think, if your last name wasn't McCain, it wasn't McCain, you'd be working at the Waffle House on the midnight shift.
Yes, because she's a stupid. She's stupid. That's stupid with two O's. It's like, again, what do you call it? The DNA. She won the DNA lottery or the sperm lottery or whatever the fuck, and she got lucky.
The lucky sperm
and got
lottery.
Born to the lucky. She won the lucky sperm lottery. Because had she got born to somebody like if her parents had been from Appalachia, she'd be lucky to work. Like I, and we were talking about the midnight shift at the Waffle House. Not if you live, if there's a Waffle House, like say in Atlanta or somewhere where, after midnight, that's, people come to the Waffle House after they've been partying all night. So she couldn't work that shift either.
Oh, and by the way, Ron and Raleigh reminds us, subject on California movies. There's a series on called Daybreak about post-apocalyptic Glendale. Only the teenagers have survived and divided into tribes, nerds, jocks, and so forth.
Yes, it's on Netflix.
Isn't that sort of like an expansion on the idea of Lord of the Flies?
Sounds like it. And I'm like, I'm not going to do it to myself. Because I, as a matter of fact, after I watched the Dolomite movie, and by the way,
everybody watch,
huh?
I was gonna say, that everybody needs to check that out.
They have to. I mean, because I usually avoid it. I saw one Dolomite movie, one Rudy Ray Moore movie, whatever, and I was appalled. I was offended. It was vile. It was just. And I was like, it was horrible. And this was years ago, because Dolomite heard all this shit about Dolomite. So finally, I found the Dolomite movie and I watched it. I couldn't get all the way through it. I'm like, I can't with this. This is too much. It was beyond Blaxploitation and all that. I could do it. So, it wasn't Shaft, it wasn't Coffee, it wasn't...
Was it like Minstrelsy?
It wasn't even that. I can't even explain it. So, maybe a little Minstrelsy. It could be. But anywho...
I saw the photo of Eddie Murphy's, characterization. And the first thing I thought of when I saw the Saturday Night Live skit from this past Saturday... what's it called? First Impressions Court.
Oh shit! That shit was fucking hilarious.
When Keenan came on with his baby blue suit,
Ooh.
he reminded me of the publicity photos of Eddie Murphy in Dolomite.
Right. So as I'm watching, so now I had no idea what to expect from this movie, other than I'm like. I've been an Eddie Murphy fan. I have forgiven Eddie Murphy a lot. I forgive him for Norbert. I've forgiven him for a lot, Dr. Doolittle. He's always been my guy because he's Eddie Murphy. So I'm like, I'm going to watch this because I want to see what are they going to do with this movie? Or is this just going to be just another Blaxploitation movie? What are they going to do? And Bob, I'm sitting there watching this movie and seeing what Rudy Ray Moore went through and his backstory and what he meant to people. And I have a whole new appreciation for who he was and even his movies and what he was trying to do with his movies and his comedy and stuff like that. It is I mean, there were some parts that actually moved me to tears. I was just like, God, come on. I'm not crying, you crying, kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, it was just, I came away from that going, wow. And Eddie Murphy, he is, you know, he is so good. He is, you know, he's the clown and the fool and all that, because he is a clown. He is silly. He's Eddie Murphy. He's Eddie motherfucking Murphy. But the man can act. You know, I don't know. Did you see Dreamgirls?
No, I was trying. You were talking about all the things you forgave him for. I was trying to think about the what's the movie where he gets in, his character gets in with what is a thinly veiled reference to Scientology? Bowfinger.
Oh yeah.
Keep it together. Kit. KIT. Keep it together. Kit.
Right.
I paid for a ticket to that movie.
I'm so sorry. But no, that's the movie that Jennifer Hudson won the Oscar for.
So, oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
If you ever get a chance to watch it, if you find it on, you know, Amazon Prime or whatever, because yes, I do own that. I actually saw it. I saw a free screening of it before it even came out. And when it did come out on Christmas Day, I went to see it on Christmas Day because I really enjoyed it. And Eddie Murphy's character was basically like the Marvin Gaye. He was basically Marvin Gaye. Because, as you know, Dreamgirls is a thinly veiled Motown Supreme kind of thing. So, but that's the first time. I'm like, well, goddamn, Eddie Murphy could act. Because he was really good in the movie. Really good.
Well, I've had multiple requests while we've been talking, just based on what you did. We got to do a couple of seconds of this just real quick. I was waiting for that line. Encino's so bitchin'.
So totally bitching. Like, oh my God. I cannot believe that I graduated from high school 35 fucking years ago. And I mean, it is still part of our culture. I mean,
oh, it sort of went underground for a little bit, and then it just rose back up, and it turned out it had crawled all over the United States.
I thought it was great with neon. You know,
when little redneck girls are up speaking and vocal frying, you know it's reached pandemic proportions.
Yeah, see, that's when you know it's the world is coming to a fucking end. But it is what it. I mean, if that's the worst, I mean, it tap dances on my nerves too. And I used to speak that way. Not all the time. Trust. You know, I knew when to turn that shit on and off. Because if I didn't, I would, there was a strong chance I would get my ass kicked. You know, but, but I had no, it's just the way I spoke and because I was in the Valley and I went to school in the Valley, the Valley from sixth grade to when I graduated from high school.
So when you moved to Encino, that's like, you know, if you were a New Yorker and you'd moved to Midtown Manhattan, you would have been culturally obliged upon stepping into your new apartment in Midtown Manhattan to maybe, I don't know, sing a bar or two of Moving On Up. I'm sorry, not Midtown, to the east side, to a deluxe apartment in the sky. So when you finally moved to Encino, did you stand in the yard and yell, "Encino is so bitchin'"?
Well, it was so funny.
You just did it involuntarily.
It kind of sneaks up on you. But when my best friend, Sarah, because, you know, she's my ride or die bitch. And she's been with me through the fire, the whole shebang. So we're standing in my house, right? And we did start singing. We didn't, you know, because she would have sucked. She would have slapped the shit out of me had I said, "It's so bitchin'." It didn't even dawn on me to say that. But we did say, "Well, we're moving on up." Fish don't fry in the kitchen. Beans don't burn on the grill. Took a whole lot of trying to set up that. Yeah, we did the whole thing.
You did it. Yeah. Yeah.
Now we're up in the big league. Getting our turn at bat.
God almighty. Pop culture owns us. Yeah, you were talking about 40 years. 40 years for me will be June of 2021. Which
wow.
Just makes me like, what the actual...
It's one of these things when I think about, you know... Now, when we were growing up and up until, I guess, I don't know when they stopped doing, have you noticed that they don't do, I mean, you don't watch TV as much as I do, well, broadcast television anyway. They don't do theme songs anymore.
No, there may be a little instrumental action or something, but a lot of stuff cold opens. And then you get, And you get the option now that we're streaming everything. You can just click it and go blow right past it,
and go and blow. You don't even you skip intro.
I mean, I'm trying to think if there are any TV show intros that I could even hum if I needed to, and I don't think there are. So you're not at home. You're out and about on the mean streets of Southern California right now, right?
Up in Encino, I'm gonna. Because I carved myself.
The mean streets of Encino.
The mean streets of Encino. I carved myself into oblivion last week. And yes, this is the first week since I've been on. When I waited on Friday was the first week that I gained weight. Yeah, I gained 6 ounces.
Damn it.
6 ounces. And I'm like, I just needed, you know, so I told Jan, I'm like, okay. And especially after Saturday's party, you know, I mean, I did pretty good. I didn't really eat a lot, but we had a shit ton of food.
Yeah, but I tell you what, after that video, I saw you can beat hell out of a pinata.
Did you tell anybody?
No, I didn't even mention that. Tracy had a pinata at her party. She sent me video. She was the fourth person to take a turn at the pinata. Damn thing was made of concrete. She was swinging at that thing like a samurai. And go, whack! Nothing. Whack!
Nothing!
Nothing. And, you know, to your credit, there wasn't a hell of a lot of swing and a miss on there. I mean, you fanned on a few of them, but you made solid contact and absolutely nothing happened.
Nothing. And I'm thinking, and like you said, had that been a children's party, there would have been some upset little kids. Seriously. Should we post that video on the Horn family page?
Oh, I think it would be wonderful if you posted it on the Horn page.
I think, you know, and replace, because I went family. Well, now here's the thing. Now, you know, we had the Halloween party, so the it was adequate, you know. I got a witch pinata. There's actually a place in LA called the Pinata District, only in LA, and it's downtown LA. And up in, from is like a 3 or 4 block radius of nothing but pinatas and other store, you know, other stuff. But mostly pinatas. I mean, and then they have the old school candy there as well. They got old school candy. They got regular candy. They got Mexican candy. Everything you could possibly get. So when I went to look for the pinata the week before, they didn't have the Halloween pinatas out yet, but they had this one pinata, and it took everything that I had not to get it. I'm like, is that a fucking Trump?
Oh.
It's not a Trump pinata, but it was Boss Baby, but it fucking looked like Trump. And it took...
Yeah, because you probably couldn't call it a Trump pinata, or that seedy grifting family would sue you for likeness infringement.
Right.
So you call it Boss Baby.
Exactly.
By the way, a reminder coming from Ron and Raleigh. You might like to know, says Ron, Moon Unit Zappa is now a 52-year-old mother of a teen daughter named Matilda Plum Doucette. 52.
Moon Unit Zappa is 50. So that means she's only a year younger than me.
Mm-hmm. That would make her three and four. That makes her a 1967 baby.
Yep. Unless she's turning 53 this year, because the year is not over. So there's always a possibility that she's a 66 baby like Agnes and I. So,
well, that's true. That's true. We're running out of a year.
So, and speaking of running out of a year, I best get my ass in the store and get this stuff for dinner so I can go home. But
happy wife, happy life.
But I just, you know, in parting, I'm glad that Ferg is home.
Well, not exactly home yet, but out.
Well, but out of where he was. That he's no longer in that horrible place. That I hope and pray that he gets better, and that that time away from his family gave him some insight as to pulling himself together. And sometimes, you know, these things wake people up, and I'm hoping that this
I do too. And we've got a to-do list as long as our arms. There's mental health work to be done, but we've also got to get him to a doctor to get some testing done, among other things. MRSA runs rampant in that filthy facility.
That's right. My God. I forgot.
And he's still got an open slash wound on his shin that is not healed. And this last 28 days has also sort of given him notice that he is heir to apparently my side of the family's predilection for high blood pressure. So I started blood pressure medicine when I was about maybe 32, and it looks like he's already starting it at 24 or 23.
I've somehow managed, and as heavy as I got, and still as heavy as I am, I have somehow avoided high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and diabetical. Yes.
The sugar?
I said diabetical. I avoided the sugars.
The sugar diabetes?
Wait. Sugar diabetes. And before I forget.
How we say it in Appalachian down south. She's got the sugar.
She got the sugar. Don't get my sugar up.
Mm-hmm.
So, I just want you to know how much I love you guys. And I wish, I mean, it's like I said, it's one of those things of why I would never leave California, because if you guys were here, there would be so many
services.
Things.
There would be access.
There would be,
there's a big difference between healthcare and access to healthcare, but the greater your options, the greater the likelihood you're going to get, you might find something that's successful. There's a whole lot of horse by the door or no horse at all here.
Right. Just the fact, you know, that all the things that you guys are going through, there's services. And see, the thing is, I know people that could get him everything that he needs to get him where he needs to be. But that's because I'm here. I would have everything that you're going through, I would be able to facilitate and get it done. But because you live in West Virginia and I have no contact, and even if I had contacts, like you said, would do a goddamn good bit of good, because you guys don't have the kind of resources that we have out here. And if he was on Medi-Cal out here, just the services that he would be able to have access to, it's mind-boggling. Just the sober living home houses, like I said, you know, not a halfway house, but an actual sober living home.
Yeah,
they're everywhere. They are everywhere. You know, and recovery houses and all rehabs and all sorts of, you know, outpatient, inpatient, all sorts of, I mean, because fucking California, you know, but again.
Yeah, I mean, you take the sweet with the bitter. Y'all have civilized access to health care if it's not burnt down.
If we don't wake up the next morning to, you know, it being all up in, you know, up in smoke. And I'm not talking about, you know, Cheech and Chong. I'm talking about, you know, straight up in smoke. So on that note,
y'all got a scarcity of water problem too, and throwing all that water on all them fires. That. Right.
We had gotten, because we had a hell of a lot of rain this past winter, and now with all these fires, it just, you know, it just sucked up all that gain that we have from all that. Because it rained basically up until April this year, and now I don't ever remember it raining until April. We were lucky to get rain until January. And we had rain up until April. So we were like, we thought we were the shit. We were pissing in high cotton, man. Right? Yes, that. But, you know, we have a bunch of fires, and now who knows? I don't even want to know what our water situation is, because California's on fucking fire from Northern California to Southern California. I don't know what's happening. I haven't heard anything about the Central Coast. Again, I can't keep up. So, on that note, I'm going to go in the store so I can make. I'm going to make salad tonight because, like I said, I carved myself into gaining 6. And if I, you know, the good news is, if I didn't work out the way that I work out, it would have been far worse. So, thank goodness for, you know, getting up off my ass and moving.
Indeed.
Indeed. So on that note, give Agnes, when you see her next, my love and a hug, and I will talk to you soon.
All right. You take care, Tracy. Bye now.
You too. Bye-bye.
The one and only Tracy calling from one of the rare non-infernal parts of Southern California, namely the Valley. So, well, let's see. Let's just keep it rolling. We'll just make it a kind of a California sort of evening with Scott also not on fire. That's a good thing. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Bob. Hey, Bob. Hey, Bob. I think I got a new thing there. Hey, Bob. Hey, Bob. Hey, Bob. Is that gimmick infringement or?
No. That's open for the taking.
All right. Go me. I was a little late to the party today. It was so nice to hear Tracy is doing all right and unscorched. I was worried about her. And but there was some good news with the high winds. A trailer truck full of mayonnaise blew over.
No hope for you. None.
No, probably not. You know, it was on its way to Ralph's or Albertson's or one of the big stores, and damn thing blew over. Bob,
well,
coming
when
over
you,
the
when,
hump.
You, when you get out to Ralph's or Smith's or whatever,
yeah,
you got to go into the cracker aisle and
cracker.
See.
Yeah. Who you calling a cracker, boy?
Yeah, quit that.
No, sorry.
You got to go into the cracker aisle and check and see if you can get these wicked minis. Now, granted, they're out of Arkansas, but they're west of the Mississippi.
Wicked minis?
Yeah, they're these tiny little oyster crackers that are pre-seasoned.
Ooh.
Garden dill, Parmesan, garlic, and hot chili.
Oh, man. Wicked minis.
Yeah.
All right, I'll ask for them by name. Bob.
Ask for them by name. Tell them Bob sent you.
Yeah, hey, Bob sent me. Bring me some wicked minis, would you, baby? I don't know. Listen, a couple of things. I don't know what the nature of this call will be, Bob, whether it'll be upbeat and positive, you know, my usual cheerful earful, or what. But the water situation out here, if anybody wants to know how unlikely it is that this place would have become settled and sprawled out the way it has been from L.A. on down south to where I am in San Diego. Back in the mid-90s, there was a three- or four-part series on PBS called Cadillac Desert. And it tells the entire story of how Los Angeles and the West were settled and what the things that they had to do, Bob, to bring water from back east in the valley. I forget the name of the valley, but all it was farming and ranching up there. And they finagled somehow the occupants of this valley into signing on to a thing that would divert their water that they were using for farming and ranching to parched Los Angeles and points south. And it's all true. It's I think some of Chinatown was based on that. And by the way,
yeah,
Bob
yeah,
Evans
was.
Died. Did you read old Bob Evans, the producer who brought us Harold and Maude, Chinatown?
No, I thought you were talking I thought you were talking about the restaurateur. I thought he'd been gone for a while.
Yeah. No, this was Bob Evans. And anybody who's not familiar with his body of work as a film producer for Paramount, you owe it to yourself to spend $2.99 or $3.99 on Amazon Prime and watch the documentary that was based on his book of the same name, The Kid Stays in the Picture. Have you ever seen that?
No.
Oh, God, Bob, if you love film, and I know you do, and if you want something escapist, there ain't nothing more escapist than Hollyweird, you know? Snuggle in, you and Agnes, snuggle in to the big horn bed, the big Kincaid mansion bed, and get comfy and call that thing up on your device. The Kid Stays in the Picture. It is a wonderful documentary about a true Renaissance man. I mean, he gave us The Godfather. He gave us Harold and Maude. He gave us Black Sunday. Just about any of the instant classic films of the 70s, Robert Evans had a hand in shepherding those into the theaters and on to box office greatness. I'm telling you. Yeah, he was 89. And you talk about resilience. Watch that documentary and tell me if Bob Evans wasn't a man with bounce-back ability. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to get sidetracked on that.
Oh, no worries.
Just a stellar... And he was a kind of a sleazy fellow in a way, and I guess you have to be.
Part of the
in
biz,
Hollywood.
Isn't it?
Yeah. But more often than not, he was a straight shooter and was a talented guy in terms of, you know how some people in the music industry and radio can smell a hit as the music rep walks into the door?
Yep.
They know that the guy has got a hit in his satchel and he doesn't have to pay you to play it. You know, with this is how Bob Evans was when it came to picking, you know, instant Hollywood classics. So watch that film when you get a chance. I think you'll get a lot out of it. But getting back to Cadillac Desert, you should be able to find all three or four parts on PBS, on YouTube. And some of the stats will probably changed because it was in the mid-90s when this thing was on PBS. But it just spells it out. And we are fools for living here in terms of the water situation. That's going to be, never mind oil scarcity, the big thing for the entire planet is going to be potable water in the coming years.
Right, and the fact that we have ruined a single ounce of it in the pursuit of hydrocarbons is the ultimate in irony, and it is going on to this day. Remember,
and factory farming.
Yeah, but one of the most frustrating things for all of the other liberal stuff that he did, Jerry Brown was a fracking fan. How can you be a fan of fracking in a state that, under the best of circumstances, never has enough water?
No, that's insane.
And it's one of the crazy making things about. I mean, once upon a time, it was argued that Central Appalachia, which, you know, West Virginia is the only state entirely bounded within Central Appalachia. You know, Pennsylvania, yeah. The hills peter out. Kentucky goes toward the Ohio and the Mississippi River and flattens out. Virginia has the tidewater, et cetera, et cetera. Tennessee goes over into the central highlands, the plateau of Nashville, and works its way down westward toward the Mississippi. But West Virginia is entirely inside Central Appalachia, and we are unique in that regard. And once upon a time, this little tormented state was the most well-watered state in the Union. We had no lack of water.
Before industry.
I'm talking about up into the 70s, the 1970s.
Well, what changed? I mean,
when mountaintop removal came along, it destroyed the massive blasting destroyed the water table all over southern West Virginia.
Oh.
And then they took their coal mine waste, their waste water, and injected it into the ground and pumped it back into old abandoned underground coal mines.
Yeah, and those are not hermetically sealed at all, because it's nature. You can't. So there's bound to be leaks into the water supply underground, and horrors ensue. Jeez.
I mean, it's a little community down on the pretty much Raleigh Boone County line, where the only thing they shared in common was the air that they breathed and the water that they drank and bathed in and washed with. And you've got a line of homes, different families, different genetics. And everyone in six of those homes, somebody gets a form of brain cancer that generally happens only in 1 in 100,000. And they all die.
Now, is any of that related to those trailings, those slag pits?
Well, no. The water was ruined by mountaintop removal, by toxic waste seas that are unlined, where the seepage just goes straight into the aquifer. I don't know what you mean by slag pits.
There's a little natural place, a sort of an indentation in the geography, and they throw all the trailings and the nasty stuff.
Oh, that's little... no, that's called a valley fill. The mountain is here, the valley is here, and they took everything and shoved it over into the valley and flattened out the valley and buried the streams. And then there, and then there's what they do with the because anytime you mine coal, you're going to have a water problem. And so they took the water from the prep plants and from the from the operation itself, and they pump it. They build a dirt dam.
Yeah, this is what I'm.
Yeah, and they and, of. And they pump all their toxic waste into the behind the dam, and you know, like the one, it's on my Twitter timeline. You can find it. 9 billion gallons of toxic waste.
Yeah, yeah, to the people downstream. Surprise!
Yeah, and it has an impact.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that was what was happening to these folks in Printer, that little community I mentioned. And well, see, as if that wasn't insult enough, then it takes massive amounts, and this extends beyond West Virginia. You know, there are people who refer to Pennsylvania not as Pennsylvania anymore, but Fracksylvania. Because yeah. Pennsylvania is the Wild West for fracking. And you've
Where that documentary was done a few years ago. Gasland or what was that called?
Yeah, yeah. Where the water catches fire coming out of the faucet?
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah, because the government who was that guy who was on MSNBC, that former governor of Pennsylvania?
Bob Casey?
No, or maybe he was the former mayor of Philadelphia. You know the guy. He used to always be on MSNBC.
It's Bob Casey. Big...
No. It wasn't Bob Casey. It was another guy. My mind is a blank on him. But
Pennsylvania decided to open up and just to be the Wild West. And so all these fracking fluids that they use are proprietary. So that means the people who have to live with it aren't allowed to know what's in it, and neither is government. And one state north, you get New York, where one of the things that Andrew Cuomo did right is to sign the fracking ban. You can't frack in New York State.
Yeah, and good for him. But see, and that's yet another distinction out here in California. Now, granted, we do have issues with, I mean, it wasn't all that long ago that the wells, the offshore wells off the coast of Santa Barbara, back in the 70s.
Yeah.
There was a problem.
Oh, Ed Rendell. Ed Rendell.
Rendell. I just could not think of his name. But yeah, I mean, and it surprises me that Jerry Brown would go for something like that.
Oh, but he did.
His father. There's another good documentary about, I think it's called A California State of Mind. I don't know where it's available currently, but it's about Edmund Brown Sr., back in the late 50s and into the early 60s until Reagan came along to become governor. He did a lot of good stuff for the state. And was he perfect? No, but no one is, all right? And here's something I didn't know. I mean, I knew it, but I'd forgotten it. There on PBS, on Monday night and Tuesday night, there is a one-hour magazine show, kind of like 60 Minutes, called... my mind, Bob. Who is this again? Wait a minute. Hold on. Let me look here. It's called... let me look it up on my TV viewtip thing. Retro Report. Retro Report on Monday and Tuesday nights on PBS. Last night's episode should be on. It was only 25 years ago in California that there was a statewide ballot proposition that would have basically banned immigrants from this state. It would cut off they're coming into the state. It would have cut off them receiving any services, everything from public education to emergency room treatment. And this was all under the Pete Wilson regime. And this that bastard used to be mayor of San Diego long before I got here. And then he got to be a governor or senator or something. And just, you know, I guess in the last days of California Republicanism, decided to throw the immigrants a curve. And the damn ballot measure passed. And fortunately, it never got implemented because the courts intervened and said, no, you know, the states can't be dictating immigration law. It's a federal thing. But it just goes to show you that in the space of 25 years, if you get people aware enough, they can change the makeup of the government of a state. And you look at what happened in 2018 with the midterms. I think there's like 23, if that, 15 or 23 Republican House members, U.S. House members, in the whole state of California. And the delegation otherwise is 54, 56 House members from California. Orange County has no GOP House members in the U.S. House. And that's Orange County, which used to be Nixon's famous place and Reagan's famous place of power. And he would always go down to Orange County and bang the drum for his way of thinking. So I'm not saying it
well,
can happen.
Is Santa Clarita Orange County?
No, Santa Clarita's, I think it's north of L.A.,
okay, because, I mean, that was said to have been a Republican district when Katie Hill finally took it away and then was driven from the House because she did something that wasn't half as bad as probably 99% of Republicans have done.
I was so flabbergasted by that when I heard that. Back when Vice News used to have a nightly half-hour news segment on HBO, and then it just up and disappeared a month or two ago. This was back during the midterm races in 2018. They did a full half hour following her campaign. And I'm thinking, man, this is just what that part of California needs. You know, a young, keyed in, intelligent, female House member to replace the old fool that the GOP had been putting in there year after year. And then this news comes out, and I think some of it has to do with her ex-husband is not the most pleasant of people, and that's putting it mildly, apparently set her up in terms of exposing her own personal business. See, that's what they do, you know. They and you can't ever do it to them, you know, these Republican operatives. Boy, I'm telling you, if we really have our act together, maybe we can rid ourselves pretty much of the presence of them in our body politic. I know that there's going to be enclaves where, you know, reason will never get through into the heads of people or in the hearts either. But there are enough people in this country in places where it matters that are not, they're simply not going to allow a repeat of what we were presented with in 2016. They're just not going to permit it to happen. And I know that I get into my little optimistic kick there, but I really think it's these past almost 3 years of Trump have been a wake-up call of sorts where people are seeing what the consequences are when the inmates are allowed to take over the asylum. I don't know of any other way to put it. The inmates have taken over the fucking asylum, Bob.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, George Papadopoulos has announced that he's going to run for Katie Hill's seat.
Oh, God. I mean, well, what's his name?
These double standards have real consequences.
The guy that was the attorney general, Jeff Sessions, Jefferson Beauregard.
Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions, the turd.
He's mulling a running for his Senate seat, or a Senate seat. Did you hear that? I mean,
Yeah, I did. But the more the merrier, because in the Republican primary, the more the merrier, because Roy Tolamore is going to run too, and I
now,
desperately want
Ten
that to happen.
Guy on the horse.
Well, yeah, I mean he's the go hit on Santa's little helper at the Gadsden Mall guy.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, he's got a list of sins as long as your arm. But, Jesus. Well, this has been a mishmash. I didn't mean for it to be this jumbled, but are you feeling any better? Are you guys, do you see hope or light at the end of the tunnel?
Yeah, I mean,
something?
This was a huge step today. The thing is, though, every huge step requires another huge step in the immediate aftermath.
Yeah.
So.
Well, things have a tendency to come together sometimes with not even a lot of effort. I mean, sometimes you can take, it's like the end of the month shuffle for a lot of us, where the cupboard's not quite bare. There's a few things that there doesn't seem any way that you could match them together and make a meal of it. But even with meager resources and limited options, sometimes, you know, if you add love to the mix and add, you know, just tenacity and high hopes to the mix, but love primarily. So love will cover a multitude of not sins, but deficits where there's stuff missing. Think of love and just devotion as a really good, strong bonder and filler, if you will, to the situation. And you can't go wrong. And I know that you and Agnes and the rest of the Horn family, both, you know, in terms of your natural family and your extended family.
Well, I'm not kidding when I refer to this as a family community congregation. Emphasis on the word family.
And what is the most important thing in a family, no matter what? We all make allowances for our shortcomings, but when push comes to shove, there's love. You know,
and a determination to stick together.
Yeah, because when you know that somebody's on your side, it heightens your ability. It magnifies what you already bring to the battle and knocks it up a few notches. And sometimes that is what makes the critical difference. You know? It's the concept of having the back of people you care about. And that plays out in many, many different ways. Some of us can bring thus and so to the party, and others not so much, but we've got something else that's just as important at the time when you need it. So, you know,
our thing here is do what we've got to do today, work on what we got to do tomorrow.
Yeah, it's like eating an elephant.
Yeah.
You can do it, but you got to take it one bite at a time and chew 32 times because that's promotes good digestion.
Yeah,
something.
And yeah, good dental hygiene, I guess. Right.
Yes. Brush and floss as often as possible.
Indeed. Well, I'm glad you called, Scott. We're going to knock off and get out of here because bottom line is I am worn out.
And eat certs.
With a hint of Retsin.
Ding. Okay, Bob. Take care.
Right.
Love, love, love.
All right. See you, Scott.
For you and all concerned.
Thank you. Take care. Bye now.
Bye now.
Our buddy Scott. Calling from San Diego and kind of echoing what is it, 1 Corinthians chapter 13? Lady B with a note on the way out the door. Oh, my God, Tracy. Like, you're, like, telling me my life story. It was, like, so unfair how we were treated. But that was, like, I mean, totally how it was, for sure. Unfortunately for me, Colorado is a lot whiter than Cali. So believe me, it was tough. Plus, I ended up at a Southern HBCU, historically black college or university. Some of the kids there resented the fuck out of me, especially since my white accent got me the co-anchor position over our nightly college newscast, despite me being only a freshman. I beat out a girl who'd been trying to get that position for 2 years. I don't regret a thing, and frankly, I deserved it because I was good. Nowadays, even though I think there will always be the haters, I hope kids don't trip about stuff like that anymore. Honestly, you can't help where you're raised, and the better the speech advantages you gain, the better off you are, period. Speaking white doesn't make you white, and if you believe that, you're lost anyway. Barack Obama can tell you personally that black is black. I'm very proud of my accent. It shows I'm educated. It's helped me get jobs sight unseen. It's like being a tall kid who gets recruited to play basketball even though he's never played before. He gets a foot in the door, and that's exactly what I needed, but in this case, I had the talent. So yeah, Bob, the struggle, albeit cruel and foolish, is real. But I am and always will be proud to be a black woman. I'm powerful because I know both sides. And isn't that half the battle? Yep. So, and so, too, of course, is showing up. And I know a little bit about that, too. There's a line from a song called Good Old Boys Like Me, where he sings, but I had choice, I had something, and I could choose, learn to talk like the man on the 6 o'clock news. I had teachers in high school who busted their asses every day to teach a little handful of Southern kids, black and white, not to talk like where they were from. And to speak network standard. And because it was beaten into our heads that we were going to go somewhere and that we had best learn to speak like people would not know where we had gotten there from. Because we would be judged. And I passed that along to, our family. The lesson stuck with some better than with others. But in particular with Southerners and with certain perceived ethnicities, the ability to not sound like who you are expected to sound like not only opens doors and gets feet in them, Jesus, I just almost said foots, doesn't just get feet in doors. It gets them opened because they don't know who they're opening it to. So, yeah, it's real. And so, hey, that's it for Titanic Tuesday. Prayer meeting Wednesday tomorrow with a couple of lead stories that are real Lulus. Thank you to everyone who keeps this program going. Thank you so much, whether you're a subscriber or whether you contribute a la carte, thank you. Thank you to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this program, no matter how you so do. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and to Steve. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Cold River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. Go by crmw.net from time to time just to see what they're up to. They're up to a lot. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.